Welcome to the Ultimate Journey of Self-Care. I am Allison Kaczkowski, your host. Thank you so much for tuning in to check out exactly what we're talking about. Self-care means so many things to people. It's one of the reasons I decided to start this show. And you'll hear self-care discussed from a number of different angles in this space. I am grateful to have you with me, and I hope you get a lot out of what I'm going to share with you today.
Hey, everybody, it's Allison Kaczkowski again. Thanks for joining me this week for another edition of the Ultimate Journey of Self-Care podcast. I'm your host. As always, I'm always thrilled and excited to spend time with you every Tuesday morning. Today, I'm really excited about my guest. I think you guys are really going to love this conversation. Today, I'm talking to Dr. Wayne Baird, who is a retired chiropractor. He's coming to us from the other coast, is what we like to call it, the West Coast, for those of you that are on the East Coast with me. Really, to sum it up, we're going to talk about how a lot of physiological problems in our body sometimes isn't what we think is causing it, right? Sometimes it is literally what we're thinking, what we're believing, and how we're choosing to direct those thoughts. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Allison. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. So, real quick, introduce yourself before we get into the juiciness that we're going to talk about.
I'm trying to decide where to jump in. I am a mostly retired chiropractor, but I discovered a long time ago in chiropractic that so many of the problems that we have that are seemingly physiological problems actually have a deep root in some of the belief system conflicts that we have.
Yep.
As I was mentioning to you before, I've never had somebody come to me and say, you know, doc, my sense of self-worth has been terrible lately,
right.
and it's causing me a lot of intestinal disorders.
Yeah.
Like I say, nobody has ever said that to me.
Yeah,
and yet I've had a lot of people come and they have intestinal problems. And lo and behold, when we drill down into it, we find that their sense of self-worth is terrible. They're loaded with fears. And once we resolve those belief system conflicts, magically their intestinal problems go away.
Our physical problems tend to get better, right? As a result of that, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Awesome. So how long were you a chiropractor?
For between 25 and 30 years.
Wow. Wow. So I'm sure you saw it all, right?
Yeah. It's always magical, some of the transformations that happen with people, and they just sometimes they're just hard to believe. And so I think of them as magical coincidences or the sometimes the three P's, the practically perfect placebos that make things magically work. And to the casual observer, they kind of roll their eyes and go, oh, well, that's a coincidence. But when you have so many coincidences work, then you kind of like, okay, you go with that.
Well, I don't really believe in coincidences. I think things happen and they present themselves, and it's really up to us how we interpret it. But I don't think anything happens by accident. I think at the end of the day, it's really what we make it mean. You know, and how we connect those dots, right?
Exactly. And it's the same for the flip side of the cone, the thing I call the three N's, notoriously naughty nocebos.
Oh, I like that. I like that. That's juicy.
I mean, everyone knows what placebos are, and they have sort of an idea. And nocebo is the reverse of it. It's like, if you imagine that something bad is going to happen to you if you do X, Y, or Z, and then lo and behold, you do X, Y, or Z, and then all of a sudden something bad happens to you. And that's just as seemingly improbable as its kissing cousin, the placebo. It all boils down to what we believe. If you believe great things are available for you, then they tend to happen. It's that law. And the same thing with negative things.
Yeah, 100%. So how did you get into this? Let me ask you that. So obviously people would share things with you as they would come in the office and, you know, you would take your inventory.
Okay. Yeah. For the last 20 years, roughly, I've been working with people's belief systems to find out if there's something that they believe that's causing them to have physiological problems, or if it's causing them to have problems with the greater amount of freedom that they have. So if you asked everybody on the planet, what's your definition of freedom, you'd get 8 billion different answers.
Correct.
So So let me not assume that you know what I'm talking about by my freedom. So let me share it with you.
Okay. Yep. Go ahead.
Kind of like a turtle. When a turtle feels safe, its head is sticking out and it's looking about. But when the turtle, when something happens and causes the turtle to be afraid, it pulls its head in like this.
That's
here.
That's correct. Yeah.
And likely all living things have protective mechanisms, even plants. Okay. And when you feel safe, when you feel loved, when you feel relevant, and a number of other positive things, you find that you expand your life force energy out and you connect with life around you. And you, right, you just feel that connected feeling. But when something suddenly happens and you don't feel safe, loved, relevant, and so forth, you pull your energy in specifically, right, into the center of your chest. And you pull it in and you hold it there tight. Now, for a turtle, if something dangerous happens and the danger goes by, it brings its head back out and it's feeling okay again. But for a lot of people, they bring their energy in, and when the danger is gone, they're still holding it in. They're in a state of perpetual contracted self-isolation.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I think that's accurate.
And it creates a lot of interference with them being able to be healthy, be social, because the stress that, mm-hmm, triggers all of that, stress is the short word. The long word is it's sympathetic stress. Yeah. And sympathetic stress is connected to just about everything in our life. Your digestive system, when you're feeling sympathetic stress, it shuts down the digestive system so that you can't digest your food.
It won't pass it for energy to move and do what you need to do, right?
Your food won't pass through your digestive system because the valves all shut down. Because it's part of your fight or flight system.
Right, right. Nah. Right. So your body's way of conserving energy so that it's sort of thinking, hey, I might need this energy for later, right?
Yeah, yeah. And there's some ugly stories, and I won't get it to tell you too many, but I'll just tell you one. There was a woman that came to me, this is a few years back, and she had a difficult time passing food. She couldn't have bowel movements. And her doctor said, you have a pseudo-obstruction of the bowel.
Okay.
Now think about it. Pseudo-obstruction means...
It means like fake or artificial or whatever.
It's not a real obstruction, but it's something that's causing an obstruction, but it's not real. We can't actually put it. And the doctor pinpointed where it was. Is he assumed it was on the descending colon and it was interfering. And he says, I think what we should do is take a small section of your large intestine out and that'll solve the problem. So she kind of gritted her teeth. Okay, we'll do that. And she went through the operation. They cut a chunk out of about this big, and months went by and she healed and she still couldn't have a bowel movement. And so the doctor says, you know what? I don't think we got it all. We need to take a little more out. And now she is kind of hesitant, but she finally went along with them. And they, long story short, they took it out. The healing went by and she still couldn't poop.
Oh no.
And so he said, you know what we're going to need to do is we're going to need to take it all the way down to the rectum and take it out and give you a colostomy bag. We're going to sew up the butthole and give you the bag on your right side. And she said, over my dead body.
Right.
And so she went to a couple of other doctors to get second opinions. And they said, well, what did your first doctor say? And she told them, they said, well, we concur. That sounds like the right thing to do. And so after enough doctors ganged up on her and concurred with the opinion, she consented to it. And she got her the rest of her large intestine whacked out and got the butthole all sewed up and got the bag on it. And time went by and she still couldn't poop.
Oh, no.
somebody told her, go and see this guy, me. And so in about 5 minutes, I measured, using muscle testing, I measured the amount of stress that she had in her body, and it was like over the top. And so we ident- We identified several factors that were contributing to the stress. She was afraid all the time. She had some abandonment issues with her family, and there's a handful of things. Yeah. And after we addressed them and made them so that they were more palatable, all of a sudden the stress was on and the valves opened up. And it I think it was about 45 minutes, the transit time from the time the food went in her mouth to the time it hit the bag. And all of a sudden she had free movement of the food going through there. Oh. And so the idea here isn't to trash the world of surgeons and totally. So forth, but it's hard not to squint at what happened, because I would like to tell you that's an isolated event, but it's not. It happens all the time. And so if there are legitimate reasons why people need to get things surgically removed from them, I'm all for it. Okay. But if you can identify a less invasive solution for a problem other than drugs and surgery, then I'm all for that too.
Probably 100%. Yeah,
and,
I would agree.
And so I have enough experience with those things behind me that I'm a real big advocate for identifying belief system conflicts in people as a first step before taking more invasive steps into.
But I mean, it's kind of like what we said when you and I, before we hit record, it's like we often try to correct for the wrong problem, right? We often think that it's something when really it's something else. And yeah. So when we think about the common denominator with all that, I mean, everybody thinks thoughts that like scare them. Everybody thinks thoughts that hopefully make them happy too. But really what it comes down to is every day is everything that we think, everything that we do and the decisions and everything that we make, we all see it through the lens of what we believe, right? It's kind of like, that's why, you know, you and I could be sitting here in the same room. I'll just use this as an example. We're sitting here in the same room and we're both looking outside, right? And I could say, I think it's sunny because that's what I see. And you might say, well, it's partly sunny because that's what you see. It's like, that's what our beliefs do, right? So we can, you know, depending on how we're seeing something, will dictate like how we see what the possibilities are.
And taking the baton and running with that idea. Yeah. And the world is made up of 8 billion people that yeah. can see the exact same thing in 8 billion different ways. And the goal is, can we be okay with everybody else's way of perceiving it?
Yeah, it's a good question.
But in my cosmology, the most popular game in the world is not soccer, it's not basketball, it's not American football. The most popular game in the whole planet is making other people wrong.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow.
Because they do it all day long.
Yeah.
Because if you looked at, if we set up a belief scale, and at one end of the belief scale, there's a belief that goes like this. I believe that everything in life is absolutely perfect to the extent that it's like I believe.
Yeah.
But to the extent that it's not like I believe, it's wrong.
Yeah, or like I can think of a t-shirt that my swim coach used to wear when I was in high school, and it said, be reasonable, do it my way on it.
Exactly. Now, right. That sounds preposterous when we talk about it like that. Yeah. But when you see how people behave and how they respond to things that are not like how they approve of it, then all of a sudden you realize how accurate that is. At the other end of the belief system, we have a belief that says, I believe that the world, that life, that people are absolutely perfect, regardless of how different from me they perceive things and how they define them.
Yeah.
Now, between those two extremes, I believe the world is perfect as long as it's like me, and the other is, I believe it's perfect regardless of how it is. Where would you estimate that most people fall on that scale?
Most people are at the end where they make other people wrong, you know, because we want to fight for what we believe, you know?
Exactly. And the thing is that now that we talk about it, it brings into a state of awareness that there are two extremes in this whole way of believing. And people go, well, holy mackerel, I didn't realize that is how I believe about it. And step one is bringing it into a state of conscious awareness.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're never going to have an adverse response to something that's not consistent with how you've held it to be near and dear to you your whole life, because things are going to happen, and it's so different from you that you're just going to go, and your energy going to pull in like you were just exposed to something horrendous.
Yeah,
it is something horrendous. It's a belief that's inconsistent with yours.
Yeah, and I also think that, and I've kind of, you know, I'll use myself as an example. Most people that know me know that I'm pretty direct. And a lot of people that know me listen and follow the show. You know, I'm very direct and to the point. I don't really beat around the bush. And so you could probably say that I'm pretty opinionated. But as I've gotten older, one of the things I've really noticed versus my younger self is it's a lot easier to just say, that's really interesting. I'd like to know more about why they think that. You know, it's like this staying in the state of curiosity. But I think that's a practice that you have to learn to teach yourself, because I think it would be really easy to say, to your point, well, I can't believe she thinks that. She's just stupid. Why would she think that? Instead of, gee, that's really interesting. I'd like to know more about why she thinks that.
And so you've gotten control of the voice.
Right.
Because we all have this inner voice where something happens and we're talking to the voice inside of our head, and something happens and you and your voice are having a conversation like this. What an asshole. I've never heard anybody talk like that. Somebody ought to shoot that idiot. That's the craziest thing. But then
I don't think it. Doesn't mean we say it, right?
But then you and your voice have a little chat and you sanitize it enough so that it comes out of your mouth as, well, gee, that's different. And you've disguised the inner conversation so that people don't think you're a monster for actually speaking what you and your inner voice are saying.
Well, that's true. And I won't lie to you. And so I won't sit here and say, well, I've always approached things with curiosity. Of course, I'm a human being, right? I mean, I think anyone listening, you know, that's being completely honest, we all do that. You know, the question is, like you said, how do we manage it, right? It's like, I also think that at the heart of all that is, I think a lot of people don't know how to express their emotions, or they have difficulty with that, or they think, you know, we've been told to think if you think something negative, something bad's going to happen to you. And so I think a lot of it, the freedom really comes with just allowing yourself to be in that space and then decide what you want it to mean, right?
Yeah. And there's a couple of pointers that I can, if I can, I'll share about it. And if you look at those two extremes on that one belief scale, the belief that everything that's different from you is bad and everything is perfect, regardless of how different, those are two different energy states.
Yep. And they're really opposite ends, I might add.
And we are energetic beings. Yeah. And the thing about energy is that it's just like a magnet. There's some things that we're attracted to, and there's some things that we repel. Mm-hmm. And it's just like allergies and addictions. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we are addicted to an energy that doesn't serve us. And sometimes we're allergic to an energy that could serve us better.
Yeah. Yep, 100%. I think that's accurate.
And if you can identify an energy that could serve us better, that what we happen to be allergic to it, and treat it like an allergy, and create a new relationship between you and the energy that you're allergic to, and change the allergy, all of a sudden you can become more compatible with that. With the idea that something happened that's not consistent with how you say, how you think, how you do, how you be, and suddenly you're okay with it. Not only are you okay, you sort of jubilate around it, and you go, that's really cool. It's something different than me, and I can't believe it. And you develop this thing called, I think of it as a refractory period. Refractory means how long does it take before something will cycle around and be okay again?
Yeah.
So, for example, suppose something causes you, something happens and it causes you to go into a state of contraction, right? And the question is, how long does it take for you to come out of that state of contraction and be okay again? How long before the turtle lets his head come out again? And so there's a simple questionnaire that we can ask ourselves. Suppose something happens and you have an instantaneous list that you can ask yourself. For example, is my life in danger? Am I on the verge of being killed? Is somebody close to me on the verge of going kaput over what's going on? Am I on the verge of losing all my income? Are my spiritual values or something being challenged and I'm going to be, are there things that are going to represent me being torn out of my life or my state of being or my deepest beliefs? Or is this something that's not quite as serious and I'm being challenged, like, my favorite color is blue and they're trying to get me to go brown. Or it wasn't the way I wanted it to be.
Yeah, right.
It didn't have the right smell. Mm-hmm. It didn't have the right feel. It was too sexual. It wasn't sexual enough. It's too boring. It's too, you know, and you have a lot of things that trigger red flags for you. And when you consider the relevance of it relative to you losing your life, they turn out to be kind of nothing. But at the same time, we think of things like the Hadfields and the McCoys, that this 11-year feud that went on was just a simple insult. And when you look at the history of, like, the Palestinians and the Israelis, and you go back into biblical times over a childbirth with the maid and so forth. And, you know, that was terrible, but if we couldn't get over it then, you know, thousands of years later, we still have the same grudge going on between two nations of people because they're in the same state of being stuck over something that, in the beginning, it didn't represent anybody's life, but it sure has ratcheted up to that point now.
So I'm thrilled to announce that I'm partnering with a brand new product, and it's called Celevate. This is an amazing, tasty, gummy supplement, and it comes in two varieties. One designed to help you with inflammation and recovery, perfect for after a workout, or if you've had, like, several days in a row where you've really pushed it and you're really starting to feel it in your body, this is the perfect addition to a regular routine. The other formula helps address focus and memory, which, let's be honest, I think we can all use a little help there, right? What's different about Celevate is that not only does it taste great, but it has amazing antioxidant power. So many vitamins and supplements on the market today, you either have to take several in a single day to even see any kind of tangible result, or most of the time, a lot of them don't even give you the result that they promise. And Celevate checks both boxes. I take one of each formula every day, and what's more is that they pack and travel really well. So you can take some and put them in a Ziploc bag and throw it in your bag when you're going out of town, and they won't melt. And it just is the perfect addition to whatever it is that you're doing every day in the way of vitamins and supplements and whatever else works for you. So I knew that I had to get in here and at least tell you about it. I would love it if you would head over to their site and give it a try. I'm actually going to offer you a really special deal. You can find this amazing product at their website, and that's spelled Celevate.com, which is CELLEV8.com. And use my special promo code, the Allison K 2024, and you can save 15% off. I would love to know what you think once you have a chance to try this. Yeah, I totally hear you. And I just feel like there's right now, especially in the world, I feel like there's so many people what's the right way to say this? I feel like people are at a very heightened state of alertness right now anyway. And I feel like a lot of people just stay in this charged state to where it's hard for them to,
you know, give themselves that refractory period is what you describe. So I guess my next question is, what's your best piece of advice for someone listening who maybe doesn't quite know how to do that on their own? Can you offer a couple of tips or easy things for them to go with?
Yes, that's what I was mentioning, is that I've been doing this work with individuals for a long time, and I've been doing it because I want to figure out what is the benefit of it and what's the problem with the work.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of the problems with the work is that it is so deep. Mm-hmm. Like if you go to a traditional psychotherapist, to a great extent, they want to know, what did you do and how did you feel about it?
Yeah.
Man. True.
Yeah.
What did you do and how did you feel about it? And it's not, things aren't okay unless they can get you to where you're going to cry and beat your hands on the wall and so forth. You may have had a session like that in your life.
Right.
And in my work, what you believe determines how you feel and what you do. For example, there are some people that believe that clowns are happy people that spread joy and mirth, and they're just the greatest pleasures in life. And so because they believe this great thing about clowns, they feel happy, the emotion, and they have approach behavior. They want to get near the clowns and experience this joy and mirth. I know people that are terrified of clowns. They think of clowns like those monsters in the movies that you see. And because they think clowns are monstrous people hiding behind masks, their emotion is one of stark fear and their behavior is avoidance.
Yeah.
So because you have two different beliefs, it generates two totally different sets of behavior and two totally different sets of emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's difficult to see what people believe immediately. So sometimes you have to look at how they're behaving.
Yeah.
Because the behaviors are the beelines to the beliefs.
That's interesting. Okay.
And it helps you get a real trigger on what the beliefs are behind it. So I don't care what people do. It's not that I don't care about it, but I don't want to know about it. And number two, it's none of my business.
Yeah.
And I would feel horrible if somebody came in to me and started telling me about these things that are immoral or illegal or anything like that. And then all of a sudden I'm stuck with all this information. And I don't think that it's healthy for them. Like suppose they unload themselves and tell me all this stuff then all of a sudden they go, oh my goodness, what did I tell this guy? And now they're going to be nice to me the rest of their life for fear that I'm going to be a stool pigeon.
What you're saying for people listening is sometimes the best place to start is to look at how you're behaving. So that what's coming to my mind as you're talking is, it's really all about how you're being. How are you reacting? How are you, like, when you talk about how somebody behaves, there's always a trigger behind that. So it's really more about asking people to really assess if you're really quick to react to something, or you're really quick to go in a certain way when somebody says something or does something. Maybe start there. Take a look and say, why is it that I always do that?
You're right on. Let me take this another step now. So because I'm not interested in what people do, instead I want to know what they believe.
Yeah.
And at first that sounds like a pretty good deal, because you don't have to spill the beans on yourself or anything like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
But on the other hand, once you know what somebody believes, you know what they're predisposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's accurate.
And in a sense, that's even more creepy to people than actually telling me what they've done. Because on that, let's stay with that one scale between 0 and 10.
Yeah.
If they realize that I know that they're, say, a 1 or a 2 on that scale, they're predisposed to making people wrong, then I know if they've learned how to take the conversation with their inner voice. Someone ought to kill that bastard. And instead it comes, well, gee, that's different than I would have said. And you can tell that they're sanitizing it, and they're just telling you what you want to hear. And and they know that I know what's going on with them. And that's even more creepy to them than knowing what they've actually done.
So
that is the problem with my work, that it actually scares people to when they realize how transparent they are.
Well, but I also think, though, that for people listening who are genuinely curious and just maybe want to learn why they do that, because I do think that at the heart of all that, what's going to give us the most freedom is self-awareness, is learning to be more aware, ourselves.
You're totally on the right track. Let me keep moving this ball along. What has worked tremendously is to make it 100% none of my business.
Yeah. Okay.
To be able to allow, step one is identifying what people kind of believe, which is none of my business, but allowing them to see a scale.
Yeah.
If they can see a scale between 0 and 10 on any belief, they might wonder, well, I wonder where I am on that scale, but I don't want him to know it.
Yeah.
And having their anonymity means everything, because my job is to just present them, here's a scale that if we look at a belief and stretch it out in two different directions, everybody exists on this scale somewhere, and you exist somewhere too. Where you exist is none of my business. The reason that I'm sharing this with you is so that you can discover for yourself, if you want to, where you are on the scale, and that we can actually, we meaning you, can actually move yourself to a place on the scale that's a more healthy place to be.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And so really what you're saying is you want to present this in a very non-judgmental way so that people learn to not judge themselves. And if we don't judge ourselves, guess what? We're less likely to judge other people.
Yeah, because we all have baggage that's been handed down generationally to us. Whatever issues that we have in our beliefs that have been stymieing us from a healthier way of being, we didn't make it up. Yeah. It came to us from our mom.
That's accurate. Yeah, we inherited it from other people, right?
And contrary, it's a popular thing to make our parents wrong, but the reality is they got it from their parents.
Yeah, true.
And their parents got it from their parents. It's been a generational hand-me-down for so long. And if we can take that kind of forgiveness to our parents and realize that they got it the same way we did, so don't make them individually wrong. They're just a link in a chain.
Yeah, right. That's a good way to put it.
And when we make this correction in our beliefs, we don't just do it for us. We do a generational healing, so that we can move the entire dynasty of everything that's culminated in us right here, and we can create a shift in the entire thing. And it's a magical process.
Yeah.
And the good thing about it is we can do it anonymously so that they don't have to walk around feeling terrible. They don't have to worry about me knowing about it. So this is the most magical part in what I've discovered over the last several years of working with individuals, is what will make this work. Allow them to see the belief systems, allow them to get a sense of where they are in it if they choose, and allow them to make changes, all without old Dr. B knowing squat about what's going on with them, because all I am is a facilitator to help them see different belief systems or different specific beliefs that may be interfering with the amount of freedom that they have in their life.
Yeah, I love that.
And the freedom scale is 1,000 points long. And I find that the average amount of freedom in a people's life is about 212. out of 1,000, which means they're living at about 20% freedom in their life. Wow. And once we resolve one belief conflict at a time, the amount of freedom goes up in their life until they get to that magical place that we call the 990 club.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. I love that. So final words before we wrap up, like, what's your best piece of advice? What's your takeaway? What do you want people to know before we wrap up?
I work with individual people, but I really, really want to try and start working with some groups of people. And I want to start with a small group of people. And so someone out there might say, my group is the one.
Ah, and I love that. Yeah.
And they can reach me through my LinkedIn or send me an email. I have come up with a wonderful way of allowing them to discover where they are on these different belief scales or freedom scales. AI is wonderful at asking certain questions, and we actually try and estimate where different people and circumstances are. And AI is stunningly good at it by giving people, and they don't even have to give their name. All they do is give like a code number that they create, and they will answer a series of questions, and they'll kind of get a sense of where they are all through AI type questions. And it's surprisingly accurate. And the bottom line is, it doesn't matter if it's even 100%. It doesn't matter if it's even slightly off, because if you have a belief that's not totally working for you and it's creating a conflict, for example, here's a simple belief. It's so profoundly simple, and yet it affects such a profound number of people. At one end of the belief is a belief that says, I believe the world is a dangerous place.
Yeah.
At the other extreme, I believe the world is a safe place.
Yeah.
Imagine the behavior that comes from people that really, really believe the world is a dangerous place,
yeah,
relative to the other extreme.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a, remember the cartoon character Yosemite Sam?
I think so. Yeah. It's been a while, but yeah.
The cartoon character, and his position was, his hands were at the gun because he had 2 6 guns, and he was always ready to draw his gun because he knew danger was around every corner.
Yeah.
And that's kind of for people that the world is a dangerous place. They're always ready to pull those 6 guns out because they know danger's coming. So being able to resolve certain belief system conflicts, first of all, discovering what the different beliefs are that might be in conflict. People think, well, there's something wrong and I feel creepy, but they don't really know what they believe. Most people know what they think, but they don't really know what they believe.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I think you're right. I think a lot of people listening could probably benefit from that. So what's the best place that people can find you is LinkedIn?
They can find me on LinkedIn, and you can actually contact me by my email. I'm Dr. Wayne Baird at yahoo.com. That's DrWayneBaird at yahoo.com. If you're out there and you want to play the game and you have a small group, when I say small, I'm talking about no more than about 10 or 15 people, so that we can develop the system and make this, we can democratize an improvement in our belief state, so that we can become a part of a growing group of people that, who knows, one of these days the planet might become a great enough place that the family of the stars might be proud to come and visit us.
Yeah, I love that.
Be nice.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be outstanding. Thanks so much for making time to share your expertise with us. I appreciate it.
It's been my pleasure, Allison. I hope our paths cross again.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. And so folks out there listening, we've covered a lot of ground in this episode. There's a lot of nuggets. If you want to, this may be an episode that you want to bookmark and go back and listen to at a future date. And on that note, if you know anybody in your world that maybe you've had some of these kinds of conversations with, maybe there's been some kind of conversation that's come up that might lead you to believe that what we've talked about today could be helpful, please feel free to copy the link to this episode and send it to whomever that is, or you can connect with me on my site at www.theallisonk.com and just hit the connect button and write to me, and we'll do it for you if you'll just tell us where you want it to go. This is One of the reasons why we have such an amazing audience, and I tell people all the time when I talk about my shows, what a great audience we have. So if you're listening to me today for the first time, or you've been following me for any length of time, just know that we're grateful for all of you because we consider all of you our family. This is Allison Katzkowski with The Ultimate Journey of Self-Care. You are one step closer to living your ultimate life, so make it a good one.